Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Brainiac Podcast. I'm your host, Stefan Bianchi, a master's student here at the University of Toronto, and I'm really excited to be bringing you a new episode today. In today's episode, we'll be talking about something that I think can often get overlooked at times in the concussion space, and that's the influence of coaches and the impact that they can have on athletes' concussion awareness, reporting attitudes, and just culture in general surrounding injury. And to gain a coach's perspective on this, I'm so thrilled to be joined by the University of Toronto women's volleyball coach, Christine Drakic. And so thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you for having me.
So just a brief bio so we can take some stock of just how lucky we are today. Christine has been the coach of the women's volleyball program since the 1989-90 season. During that time, the team was qualified for a whopping 30 OUA Final Four appearances, winning the OUA championship 11 times. She has also been named the OUA East Coach of the Year 11 times. And lastly, beyond her involvement with U of T, Christine has also coached with Team Ontario and Team Canada in different capacities. So I think it's safe to say that, you know, we're extremely lucky to be listening to her expertise and perspective today. You know, before we get into the bulk of our episode, I just have a quick icebreaker question so our listeners can maybe get to know you a little bit better. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your coaching journey, you know, how you got into it and what coaching means to you.
Sure. I mean, I absolutely love coaching. I'm thrilled to be able to have a career that is my passion, that is a job. And so that's amazing. What I love about coaching most is that it's like life, but with no major consequences. You know, we take risks, we try out things, we do different things. And so the ball lands on the floor or doesn't. It's not major. Yes, we win or lose, but it's what I love about coaching. And I love coaching in a university setting, because it's just all about learning about yourself and working together with people. And so it's amazing. I love helping people go from A to B. How I got here, I played at the university level, at the national team level, and then stumbled across it, I have to say. I had no plans of coaching whatsoever. I started, I studied sociology with a bit of criminology, had nothing to do with coaching. I played at a high level. I understood the game at a high level. Like I said, I was a good student of the game. And it wasn't until the athletic director at the time had said to me, and we didn't qualify for the Olympics at one period, and I had had an injury, and there was sort of this transitional phase. And she said, I think you'd be really good. Why don't you coach? I'm like, I don't know, maybe. Okay, well, I'll give it a try for a couple of years, see where it takes me. 30 some odd years later, I'm still here. So that's how I got here.
That's an awesome story. And it's, you know, great to just hear how passionate you are, because it's obviously great to have passionate coaches at a university, and it's been reflected in the results, that's for sure. So now we're going to get into our conversation. I want to start a discussion by asking, how you've seen the concussion landscape change over your years of coaching, because you have a pretty unique experience in that you've been a coach throughout the entire evolution of concussion in sport. And so I was wondering just kind of what that's been like from your perspective, because I often think we don't realize just how fast things have really changed in this space.
Yeah, it's it came like it, there was no recognition of it early in, well, in my playing career and then early in my coaching career. You know, I mean, I play in a sport where balls are flying, like multiple balls are flying all over the place. So, you know, being hit in the head by a ball is not uncommon. And then, you know, we've got people who are rolling on the floor, diving on the floor. So, the, you know, then there's hit heads on the floor and there's collisions that we're in a small, like we're in a 9 meter by 9 meter space where six people are moving around and covering. So, you know, it was just, it was non-existent, even the, I mean, the term concussion or anything, like it was just like, whatever. Okay. And we just keep playing. So, you know, it was, I was, you know, I feel very lucky to have been part here at the University of Toronto when they started doing concussion research in 1999. I think it might've started here. And, you know, so that's sort of, and that was early, I think an early adoption, although it was becoming known, it was an early adoption of the term, being aware of it, being mindful of it, and just even the evolution of, you know, what the evidence has shown and how it's changed over time, you know. So it really has throughout my career, it's changed from absolutely nothing to something that is, you know, really, you know, something we watch for, something that's really critical, something that's we're aware of. And even, you know, in Ontario with Rowan's Law. So, I mean, it's moved from nothing to, you know, kind of something that's become very public and even, you know, a law to some extent. So, and the protocols have changed significantly over time, you know, from the, even at the beginning, from the, you know, the, be isolated, you know, sit in the dark kind of thing to actually being active a little bit sooner. So it's just evolved significantly and partly, you know, due to, I mean, obviously significantly due to the research that's been done and the evidence that they're finding. And so the return to play and combining it, not just return to play, but return to school, return to life has now, it's not just return to play, which what it might've been early on, but it's also return to, you know, school, return to life, return to everything. So, I mean, and I also, interestingly, in year 2000, I suffered a major concussion.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right at the beginning parts of it. So even that was interesting. When I was still playing, I was a competitive athlete at that time. And so, you know, to just see how it's evolved, it's just, fascinating.
Yeah, that's a great perspective. Like I said, it's changed so fast, just learning about it from my perspective. So having, you know, you share that experience, I think really brings it to life. And you know, being a coach and an athlete during that time, you know, how are these changes in terms of protocols, baseline testing, like how are they received by the players at first?
Well, I think if we go, you know, back to when it first started, you know, and doing the baseline, and I think even the baseline testing has evolved significantly. But we, you know, we were very much involved in it. And I mean, people didn't understand it. I mean, and also when you call something testing, they're kind of like, you know, and you're at a university, they're like, oh my gosh, you know, I have to do well at this. I have to pass it. When in fact, it's got nothing really to do with that. So I think there's, you know, a little confusion, a little early on confusion, but, you know, everybody took part in it. And, you know, I think too, I mean, another thing that may have helped within my context was, you know, when I had the concussion, I mean, I was sort of left half paralyzed for a few hours and then it took a long time to come back. And I mean, I worked with a neuropsychologist. So, I mean, even as I shared in the early times, like that was around 2000, it was, and I, all of the athletes had done baseline testing, but I hadn't. But anyways, that, you know, so I think there was sort of some real life experience, a story to share, but, you know, they were very much, you know, supportive of the protocols, weren't sure what it was about. But then when some people would be, you know, diagnosed with a concussion, they would understand and see the impact. And now it's really interesting. Now it's received as something really, you know, supportive of athletes and supportive of the health of athletes that it's, wow, you do this baseline testing, right? So, and it's more common in other places. So I think we were sort of leading edge in it to some extent, and now it's more common.
Yeah, I guess with anything new, people are going to be a little bit not hesitant, but just like kind of what's going on here. But it's good to hear that, you know, as stories have been shared and as the research has come out, people seem to be a little more on board now, which is obviously a positive thing. So I think we're going to jump into what I think is going to, you know, compose the most of our conversation today. And a large body of research points to coaches playing a pretty significant role in their athletes, you know, likelihood to report concussions and injury in general, with positive support, of course, being associated with athletes having more of a positive attitude towards reporting and leading to, you know, less undiagnosed concussions and less concussions in general, hopefully. Have you found, based on your experience, that coaches actually do have an important role to play here?
Absolutely. It has to come from the leadership and whether that's, you know, the coach and the coaches, and then also the leadership and the influence within the team. And I think it's most impactful when both those influences are happening. If the coach has to be for sure supportive of it and, you know, leading the way, because they sort of set the tone. At the same time, it's enhanced if you have the students involved and the leaders within the team involved.
For sure. And it's like the words kind of right out of my mouth. I was going to ask you about the role that some of the leadership on the team plays, but we'll kind of come to that just a little later. In terms of, you know, a coach and yourself, you know, how have you during your time with the volleyball team tried to instill this culture, and what can coaches who are maybe working on that take from your experience and implement to their own teams?
But, you know, I think it's complicated in a competitive sport environment.
Mm-hmm.
Sport is such a bizarre paradox in terms of, yes, we want to, you know, develop incredible people and, you know, and have healthy, high performance sport. At the same time, what is valued is winning. What is valued is the performance in a competition. And so how do you live in that? And I think that's really complicated. So that's the culture of competitive sport and whatever sport and whatever level you're playing at. And so for a coach to be able to, I think it's, you know, really important to understand sort of the longer term vision of what it is they're doing and you know, how they're impacting the people that they're working with over the long haul, which is hard to do when you maybe get evaluated by wins and or judged by wins or judged by things. And so it's this tension that is constantly there. So I think at first it's recognizing this, acknowledging this, and understanding, you know, what the purpose is. And ultimately, you know, the key reason why we coach is because of the people that we work with and because of the athletes. And so how do we help athletes have a healthy experience and a quality experience? And when it comes to, you know, any sort of thing that might interrupt their health, I mean, that should be something that overrides, you know, the need to win. At the same time, the athletes working with that struggle too. So they're also working with, yes, I'm growing and developing, but I'm only gaining significance if I'm playing. I'm only gaining significance if I'm part of this. So it's a tension that both the athletes and the coaches work with. And so I think the biggest thing is that the coach being aware of that tension, understanding where they are, and in the end, being able to make decisions that are in the best interests of the student athletes or of the athletes. And so making sure that's paramount. And I think that's hard to do in this. And so to have supportive people and particularly the leaders above the coach are also the ones that need to be supportive of that, to understand that this is what, you know, health takes priority and precedence. And I also believe a healthy high performance experience is going to lead to the wins and the successes too. Yeah. So, but you know, it might be longer term, not so much short term. So I think it's awareness of why we do what we do and a really clear understanding, and that to take in consideration the long-term health of the athletes you're working with is priority. And that, you know, and having the culture that under the culture on the team and in the organization that understands that, and that, you know, we rally together for the health and we can still win doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, you know, that's a great point that you made about it's not an, you know, an easy thing to do, because a lot of people don't realize that coaches are in that tough position where, you know, they want to do their job. And part of that job is you got to win sometimes. So I think, you know, from the outside looking in, maybe people don't appreciate that tension enough, that like sort of competing interests. And we'll keep that in the forefront of our mind, because I'm going to come back to that a little bit later. One thing that you did mention is that the leaders of the team are really important. And so what is it that you've seen leaders on your team do that have been successful in really kind of cultivating that culture where injury is okay, people are encouraged to speak about their injuries, and, you know, discouraged from playing through and hiding things from one another?
Do you mean the athlete leaders, the team or the coaches?
I'm talking both. Specifically about the players on a team who are like part of a leadership group, so to speak.
Well, you know, I think the experiences that they have had. So when you have some people who have been around for a while, and I mean, I work in an environment where many of the athletes were together for 3 to 4 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have a, you know, you have some older players or players who have been around for a bit who can share some of their experiences. I don't think every coach has that luxury. Sometimes mm-hmm. they just have the team in the short term and not, and don't necessarily have the people on the team who've had that experience of having, you know, having an injury and then working through it and seeing the opportunity in the injury and seeing the opportunity of, that comes with it, not just all the challenges, and helping them to say, you know, this will work out. It'll work out in the long term. I know you can't see it right now, but it will work out. And there's no need to play through this. Like if you have an issue, go and, you know, speak to somebody and, mm-hmm. and address it. So I think the, I don't know if it's role modeling or, you know, having these older players, more experienced mm-hmm. players, to be able to say, hey, it's okay. Like we've all been there. We've all had that. And, yeah. You know, you don't need to play through it. This is a long-term game, right? Like it's long. And so in the short, yeah, you might benefit here, but this short might actually end up hurting you in the long run. So I think also providing perspective, sharing experiences, providing perspective, but also then seeing them do it. So when something happens to them, even in that environment, to say, no, I think that, you know, you need to go in and chat with it. We're also lucky enough to have, you know, sport medicine staff, whether it's student therapists or mm-hmm. therapists that are there most of the time. So they actually don't come direct. They don't have to come directly to the coach. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, recognizing that they may be, especially new ones, may be a little bit shy or unsure or unclear or not so confident in talking with one of the coaches, that there's sort of, you know, I'm going to call it a triage situation where they can chat with somebody else, or they can talk with a senior player, then they can maybe talk with a therapist, then they can work their way. Or if we didn't have the therapist and they didn't feel comfortable talking to the head coach, they could talk to one of the assistant coaches, talk to a senior player, talk to one of the assistant coaches and make their way. I mean, I'd like mm-hmm. to think that I'm open enough that they can, you know, that they can come and talk with me, but I'm also fully aware of the power dynamic and everything. And no matter what you do, it always exists there. So as long as there's different ways that they can, different avenues that they can share something that's just happened.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
It, I think, is important.
Certainly. And it sounds like, you know, even if a coach does all they can, you know, it sounds different coming from a player. When you have a teammate putting their arm around you and telling, you know, telling somebody, especially maybe even a younger player, hey, it's okay to report this. You know, we support, you know, that openness on the team. I'm sure it makes a huge difference. And it sounds like it does.
Absolutely. And it's critical. And it's, and I also think that there needs, you know, it's, it can be helped with some training of those people. Mm-hmm. Like, just because they've had the experience, the senior athletes, because they've had the experience doesn't necessarily mean they know how to share it or how to be an effective influencer. So some, you know, there needs to be mm-hmm. some conversations and intentional conversations about how you can make this, how you can use your experience that you've had to make a difference for the people in you. And it's not that they don't know that, but they're not yeah. aware that they can actually do it. So sure. sometimes there's some, you know, just conversations and helping them to understand how they can be a bit more intentional with this.
Yeah, certainly. I think that's an amazing point. And, you know, kind of on that idea of, you know, them learning that they have this ability, a lot of time we hear a big emphasis on education when it comes to concussion, you know, where in theory, you know, teaching athletes about concussion and sort of the specifics about them will lead to attitude and behavior changes. But based on your experience, and especially now when, you know, a lot of education is quite common, do you think it's more about concussion or certain education, or do you think it's more about having a comfort level? You know, players might know what a concussion is, but not, you know, feel comfortable in a team setting. Do you think it's more about education or more about just having that comfort level to go talk to a athletic therapist, a coach, a teammate about when something's not right?
Well, I think it's the balance, right? Like education mm-hmm. alone is not enough. There, you know, emotion plays a big part in it. Social connection plays a big part in it. There's a lot that plays a big part in it. Education is important because people want to know why, right? So it is important, but without some influence of the team leaders and people on the team, the it'll be okay, great, yeah, I know that, but in practice, like, that's theory, and in practice we don't necessarily put that theory into, we don't operationalize that theory, we don't yeah. practice that theory. So and because I think it's, you know, and sport is filled with emotion, and competitive sport mm-hmm. is filled with emotion, and you know, and we're living in a world in terms of, you know, significance and status and depending on the age, and I think we also have to be aware of the age that the students and, yeah, and the experiences sure. that they're at. So I think it's education cannot do it alone. It's an important piece of the why, and we can always bring it in as to why, but the actual operationalization of how we do that in practice, which I have to laugh because, you know, we spend hours training mm-hmm. one skill, one thing, a strategy. And then we just assume people will know how to put that theory into practice in relationships with people. How are you going to make it a safe place? Well, we may have to practice that. We may have to actually yeah. have some intentional conversations. You know, it's sort of like saying, hey, well, we're not going to serve at all in the game of volleyball until like the very last day. And then we're going to say, hey, serve. So yeah. I think we have these sorts of how we operationalize this theory, this, the educational piece is so critical, and it needs some training. And I think the student athletes or the athletes can also help you. What would be effective? you know, how mm-hmm. we could effectively do this, because their experience, they're in they're in the know, they're working with people, and I might have a great idea of how we can operationalize or put into practice this theory, and they look at me like I've got nine heads and goes, yeah, no, I don't think that's going to work. So it is involving them in the process and helping them. So we've got this dilemma. We know why we're doing this, but people seem to not be following it. So how can we connect this? How can we mm-hmm. make this connection?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Education, of course, is extremely important, but like you said, it's not enough. And I think not enough is sort of made, and not enough emphasis is put on the fact that, you know, elite athletes, as the ones you coach, it's a different sort of dynamic within the team and within themselves. Like they're sort of wired a little bit differently. So trying to figure out how to get through to them and in the best way possible, sometimes education, like you said, it's just not enough.
Well, and the other thing is, what might work this year may not work next year with the group, and it's sort of a fluid situation. And so, you know, it's not like, okay, well, I did it in year one and then I never have to do it again. It's like people are evolving, people are growing, yeah. people are changing, people are thinking differently, people relationships change. So it has to be intentional. It has to be intentional training and practice, and it has to be intentional. And then, you know, feed, and when the opportunity arises, really trying to see here's, and sometimes you don't know when the opportunity is going to come. And so that's the time when you put into practice, and then you go, okay, we need to refine that a little bit.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, feedback like this in this perspective is something that, you know, the researchers or the people translating this knowledge in form of education can take into account to sort of make them, you know, a little even better and even more effective, you know, moving forward. Because I think, you know, it's kind of sometimes gets lost just how unique sport and team, especially in a team environment, is. But just building off of that idea of comfort level in terms of reporting, you know, having worked with athletes for a long time, there seems to be, maybe this is because concussion is just so new, but there seems to be a bit of a taboo around concussion specifically. And why do you think that athletes might be more hesitant to report a concussion compared to maybe other injuries, like a leg injury, for example, like a physical injury?
Well, you know, I think it's, I mean, there's a lot of reasons, but I think one is it's not visible,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's very clear when you've cut something, you've done something, you can't walk, you can't, you know, when you're on crutch, like you can see this. And so it's very, mm-hmm. it's very real. So partly you don't see it. And, you know, I think what is bizarre is that it's so unique how it impacts people. So like if you happen to sprain an ankle or, you know, do something, that there's usually this linear pathway of recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And so it could be that people have seen somebody with a concussion that has, you know, been out for a long time or whatever. So I think it's invisible. I think it's not clear exactly how one heals. And it's also clear that it means I won't be playing. It means I won't get on the ice or the field. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I think that's a piece of it. So it's easy to deny it because it's not visible. And the person, you know, they don't want to lose the ability to play. They don't want to lose their connection to the community. Mm-hmm. So I think there's all sorts of reasons. And it is true that even if there's an injury that's visible, that doesn't seem, they want to still play through it. So I don't think concussion is unique in that way. I mean, you know, and how many, you know, Hollywood movies have we seen where you play through the pain and, you know, no pain, no gain. And so unfortunately that's part of a culture too. Like if you're tough, you do it. So there's all these things that play a part in it, but I think it's in magnified because it's somewhat invisible, because the healing process isn't linear. And, you know, because it's going to take me away from the community and from playing.
Yeah. It's actually kind of really good in terms of leading to one of our next discussion points, which, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about, you know, how important, you know, it is that coaches prioritize injury and, you know, foster a positive culture. But I would be remiss if we didn't talk about and acknowledge that there are some challenges that come with this. And, you know, one of those things is that a common challenge that athletes experience, like you said, when they're working through a concussion, is that they miss that team experience. They miss being able to do what they love, and they don't know how long sometimes it's going to be. And so they feel a little bit isolated. And so as a coach, do you think it's one important to keep injured athletes involved with the team? And how do you do that, especially when they might be limited in what they can and can't do at that time?
Absolutely critical to keep connections with the community. And you know, we're social beings, and particularly depending on you know, the stage that they're at, but to keep them connected to the community, it's something that's very important to them. It's something, not just the relationships, but it's critical. And it's challenging when it comes to you know, a concussion, because sometimes noise, lights, different things, which means coming into the gym is challenging. If you have a sprained ankle you're recovering from, or some kind of other physical injury, you can still come into the gym, do your exercises, do your things, and you're physically connected. And it's easier to create the human connections and the team connections. The challenge with concussion is that many of the symptoms are brought on by things that are in the field of play that make that actual human connection complicated. Yeah. So it's really important and challenging to figure out how do we create and keep that connection when they're distant. I think it's great, and the evolution of some of the recovery that they can do some, you know, low risk physical activity, which can sometimes be in the field of play depending on what their symptoms are. But and if they can't go on the screen, and in this COVID time, it's even more challenging because of, it's hard to just go and connect with somebody and sit quietly in a room together, because, you know, just the pandemic has made that challenging. So I think you've had an extra layer of concussion, and you can't necessarily do a Zoom connection or FaceTime or whatever it is, because, you know, they're limited in screen time, and all their classes are on screen time. So it's just, I think it's really magnified, and it's really challenged. And this is, you know, a unique experience. How do we do it? And that's where there's some discussion with some players on the team. How do we keep, you know, player X involved? What can we do given our limitations? And maybe, you know, it's a phone call, a 10-minute conversation, right? And maybe it's a walk around the block, and maybe we set up, you know, somebody each every other day. So it's challenging. It doesn't happen organically at all. You know, it has to be intentional. It has to be kind of planned, and it appears to be organic, but it's not. There's actually been a lot of work into figuring out how we're going to do this, you know. And then it's also trying to work with the person who has the concussion and help them to realize that it's going to work out. Like it's going to work out. The path is different and it's unique, and we don't know. And there's a lot of, well, when am I going to come back? Well, you know, you work on your healing. So it's really challenging, really challenging, but incredibly important, like so important, because they're so separated from everything. And I think in this time, it's even more magnified.
So I
can't say that I'm conscious of it. I'm aware of it, and I even find it challenging. So I can't imagine somebody who's maybe not even as aware, but it's, and working with some of the students, or some of the athletes that you work with, how can we do this and make it fun, make it something that they can do and find it meaningful. And also what would be helpful for the athlete who's injured.
That's a fantastic answer, because a drum that I'm going to keep beating throughout like my time hosting this podcast is that the psychological impacts of concussion can be just as consequential as any of the other ones that people might commonly think of. You know, just for an athlete to not be doing what they love, they might not even be able to come watch a game because they just can't handle that environment. Meanwhile, you know, if you sprain your ankle, like you said, you can come watch a game. You might not be playing, but you can come watch and support. And so it's just such a different injury in that regard. And that psychological piece is so important, especially for an athlete when that's their life and they can't take part of that can really affect them. So I think that's, you know, a pretty great perspective that you've shared that I think, you know, our listeners can really benefit from. And kind of along that. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think too, it's a reminder of, as coaches, to try to help, prior to this, help people find, you know, other things that they're passionate about, and create a balance in the athletes that we work with, so that it's not so solely focused on being an athlete, so that it's a little bit easier in these transitional periods. Mm-hmm. Or if we haven't done that, this is a great opportunity to sort of say, okay, well, so what are some other things that you're passionate about and love? But, you know, yeah, absolutely, the love, the passion, the connection, something that brings them tremendous joy when it's taken away from them, huge impacts.
Yeah. And we kind of touched on the idea that concussion recovery can be pretty complex and tricky, and not as linear as we might like it to be. So as a coach, does it ever, maybe frustrating is not the right word, but is it ever concerning when you see a player sort of recovering from a concussion? It doesn't seem to be, you know, going the way that everyone would hope. You know, some days they feel good, but some days they regress and they're not feeling as good. And as a coach, sort of, how do you navigate those situations? What role do you play? Or do you kind of let the athlete kind of go through it on their own and kind of like, I let the medical staff sort of deal with that, those challenges in recovery?
Well, I think it's a partnership, and mm-hmm. for sure. I've worked with enough athletes and have worked through and have had my own and whatever mm-hmm. experiences. So I don't think at this stage, I mean, I think there's sadness and disappointment for, you know, the athlete. Mm-hmm. And obviously I don't know if I would say that it's frustrating. I mean, on some of it maybe, but it's frustrating yeah. for the athlete too. So there's a pile of different feelings that come along with it. But I think it's a recognition that everybody is so unique in the healing process, and to, mm-hmm. you know, comparison is the thief of joy. So, you know, you can't compare, this person had a concussion and they were back yeah. within, you know, 10 days, this person had and still going. And it's sort of, that's just the way it goes. That, I mean, the thing is, so working with the sport med team, I think the partnership there is critical. And I think that that's hard to do in the community, but the partnership mm-hmm. is sort of, you know, how can we get them back through their ups and downs and go? And it may take a week or two, it may take months. It's just, everybody's on their own sort of a schedule. And so I think it's working together. I don't think it's ever in isolation. I think mm-hmm. There's a partnership going on between the athlete, their caregiver, an awareness of the coach, and that we're all working for the same, you know, to try to help the athlete recover, you know, back into life, back into school, back into playing, and how can we best do it, and what role do each one of us play? So I think there's a lot of connection, conversations, and partnerships that have to go on, and really challenging for, I mean, it's so fun, like, you know, at the end of it, they'll understand it, but going through the messy middle of it, they just don't get why one day I'm like this, one day I'm not. And I said, the curve is generally up, even though there's these ups and downs, it's generally up. The brain heals in its own way.
Yeah. And that's what confuses people, unfortunately, sometimes, but that's just the way it works. Unfortunately, it's not linear, and that can be frustrating.
And I think too, the term concussion mm-hmm. has this, you know, for some people it has this, oh my gosh, I have to be isolated and, you know, dark, and there's a great opportunity to catastrophize with the word concussion because, you know, the vision and the amount is, oh my gosh, I'm like, you know, I'm going to be impaired forever for so long and for this and for that. So it's unfortunately taken on this massive kind of, you know, word that means ding, 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 mm-hmm. like, you know, whoa, which, you know, early on it was like, now it's becoming more accepted that it's, you know, it is a brain injury, obviously, mm-hmm. but you know, we just don't know. And we don't know to what extent. And like I said, the uniqueness of concussions are like uniqueness of humans. And you just, you know, we just don't know enough about it to know what the process is for healing. But I do think the word is loaded.
Yeah, it is definitely somewhat stigmatizing at times for athletes. But like you said, hopefully as, you know, awareness continues to grow and people, you know, continue to accept the seriousness of the injury, it's again, like it's not labeled as sort of this monster that can't be dealt with. It is, you know, you can't deal with it. It might not be as fast as we like, but like you said, it is something that can be worked through. So for this last section and the last question, I'm going to wrap up our discussion about challenges by putting on, you know, my sports fan hat, so to speak, for more of like a practical question. I think maybe our listeners or anybody that's watched sports or been involved with sports, like might have asked themselves in the past. So like we mentioned, it coaches at the elite level, like they're often judged on results. And I think sometimes this like hypothetical situation that like fans always think of is that, you know, when there's an athlete that appears to be hurt, appears to have been concussed, but they say, no, I'm good to play, I want to keep going. As a coach, like, how do you handle that situation? Because that can be maybe tough, it sounds like, at least in my head.
I mean, it's extremely tough, and especially in the heat of the moment, this is where the emotion comes in, right? Mm-hmm. But obviously, I mean, especially if it's visible, like if we've mm-hmm. seen it, then there's no choice. It's just an automatic, you know, you're off. And hopefully we've done a good enough job working in our team unit that when one is off, we can still manage and we can still be successful. And I mean, that's the challenge as a coach, right? Like we need to be able to move people in and out. And, you know, if it's rarely, I mean, if the athlete is actually saying, I need to come off, that's beyond anything. Yeah. Like, rarely have we come across that when an athlete, mm-hmm. and when an athlete does it, that's like, oh my gosh. It's
alarm bells.
Generally, it's, I'm feeling okay. I want to go back in. And it's sort of like, no. And that's, you know, that's my choice as a coach, because I can decide who goes in and who goes out.
That's right.
But if I see something, if I have any indication whatsoever, and if then absolutely it's just not worth it. And that's when my longer term vision has to override my immediate emotion of mm-hmm. let's keep it going. Right. Let's keep it going. And so it's a fine balance, and you want to do what's in the best interest of the athlete and the team. And there's like, it's a complex questions to go through in terms of, you know, what are the implications if you go back on, what if not? So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's tough and it's frustrating, but the longer term vision has to come in there.
Absolutely. And I can imagine sometimes athletes are a little mad when, you know, they think they're fine, but maybe they're not. And you can tell, is there maybe a conversation that comes after the game to sort of like diffuse a situation if they're still angry, just to explain to them, hey, this is why, you know, I took you off. It's for your health. Or is that something that after the game, after half an hour, they sort of understand, or sometimes a discussion necessary?
Well, I think at least the culture in our group is, I don't know if I would, I think they would understand, but I think there's always a conversation that you can have afterwards, because this created an opportunity to share some of, you know, the vision and why we made the choice we did. Now it's, you know, I think it's different if you're in professional sport but in the community sports and these types of environments, you know, for sure. It's always worth sharing information and having a conversation. Mm-hmm. And in this particular case, to say, this is the reason why I made the decision that I made. And, you know, you may not agree with me, but this was my rationale. And also find out how they're feeling about it and how we could do it differently if we needed to. Not, you know, that's after the game.
Yeah. I think that's like fantastic, having like the openness and for yourself to have, you know, the willingness to change and adopt things based on your athlete's experiences is unique in a coach. I think that's a quality that cannot be overstated, like how important it is. I think it's fantastic just hearing that from you. I think if there's any coaches listening, I'm sure, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably already do that. But either way, I think that's just such an important lesson. Just being open with your players, kind of trying to knock down that power dynamic, like you mentioned, as much as possible is so key. So I think that's great to hear. Honestly. And so I think that kind of actually brings sort of a wrap to our discussion today. It's been so insightful. Thank you so, so much again for taking the time to come on this month's episode in the middle of your season to talk about some of the really important aspects that coaches play in the concussion space. So I really, really do appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. I enjoyed the conversation.
And just before we do wrap up, I wanted to give a quick shout out to the U of T Women's volleyball team. currently at the time of recording, record of 4-1. Hopefully by the time this is uploaded, it's 5-1. Big game this Saturday.
It's actually with exhibition games. You're right. With exhibition games. Yep. You're right.
Okay. Cause I look at the website. I didn't realize those were exhibitions, but there is a game this weekend. Am I right in saying that?
There is 2 PM okay. against Ryerson.
That's okay.
Here
that's
the University of Toronto.
That's a big one. So best of luck in that game. Would you like to just share a quick word on how the team's doing this year and sort of what the rest of the season might hold moving forward?
Well, I mean, first off, just to be able to play is amazing.
Yeah, that's right.
To be able to train and to be able to play, given where the world is at right now, is just amazing. And I think what we've learned is that anything can happen, like anything.
Yeah.
Like it could stop at any moment. So, you know, the pure joy and thrill of playing, being with each other, competing. It's a new group. It's a fun group. And, you know, we're learning about each other as we go and just, you know, having a blast. So it's just amazing. So that's real. And I love working with the group and, you know, just a really competitive group and a really hardworking group.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And best of luck along the way. For our listeners who want to support the team and their efforts this season, their quest for another OUA Final Four berth, visit the Varsity Blues website for scores and schedules. And also be sure to follow their Instagram page. It's at Varsity Blues. And so with that brings an end to this month's episode. Thank you so, so much for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at concussion.can.toronto. And we'll see you next month for a brand new episode. HeadCheck Health bridges gaps in concussion care through simple, powerful technology. Join organizations like the Canadian Football League, Trek Factory Racing, the Canadian Junior Hockey League, Eastern Washington University, and Volleyball Canada who rely on HeadCheck Health to improve communication and optimize care. Visit headcheckhealth.com for more.
The music at the beginning of this podcast is by Ben Sound, www.bensound.com.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.